All right, everybody, let's take our seats, please. Everyone, take your seats, please. And operator, you can start recording.
Certainly, one moment, please. Please go ahead. The conference call is now being recorded.
Everyone, let's be seated, please.
Thank you.
No. We have a bunch online. It's about a dozen.
Hey, guys. Everybody, please be seated so we can get started. Michaela, everyone over there? All right. Okay, we're back in session, and the operator, I think, has opened the call. So Maggie and her staff are here to have our regular discussion with the compliance staff. So Maggie, let me turn the floor over to you, if I may.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity. Look forward to these events every time. With me today in the audience, I have Stacey Burnett, Khalil Rashid, and Connie Brown. So today what we hope to do is provide you a high-level update from what we've done since the last time we met, but we also are changing a little bit to where we will have opportunities, and you'll see that on the presentation slide deck, for Wednesday. We want to be able to talk to each and everybody and have that opportunity. So please, just try to attend and let us hear from you. So on our agenda today, the first thing I want to share with you, I know it's probably irrelevant to you, but it is part of laying out the roadmap for us and how we're going to get there. Our vision, and we're not there yet, is to be a trusted service provider. We deliver a compliance service provider. And to be trusted in a multi-stakeholder model that is so global, it's quite a challenge. So the approach we're going to take is no news to you. I said that when I was here in front of you in Singapore. We are going to continue with prevention. You're going to see a lot of emphasis on prevention through collaboration. You're going to see a lot more transparency and communication. And we will enforce, but it should not be a surprise. So I took back since Singapore and the Munich meeting a lot of wonderful comments that were shared with us, and we are slowly applying those. Wanted to share with you the multi-stakeholder model and how we are proceeding. I want to thank you. I've had several contacts through Mason, and had several registrars volunteer to participate on different conference calls with us or to provide us input. And I really appreciate that because that's the collaboration we look forward. We don't want to work in silos. So the model we are establishing here, I know the title of the slide says for new GTLD readiness, but regardless of readiness, guys, we have a lot of room for improvements. So what I want to focus on, if you look at the bottom part of the pyramid, we have a self-regulation, which is a self-assessment. We are in the process of building what we call self-assessment surveys or a model where we will open. It's also based on industry best practice. In previous industries I've been in compliance, we always had the annual self-assessments. Usually they're open for about a month. And it gives the opportunity to take the time and respond and provide the right information. And then when it closes, it allows us to proactively look at this and only audit and request information as needed. And as our so we're working towards that. And it's not just for registrars. It's for contracted parties. So you will be involved, and there will be a session on Wednesday that's open if you want to come by and discuss it with us. The efforts that the team is focusing on tremendously are the preventive activities and the informal resolution. We are in the process of looking across our whole model, and we've standardized it, and we're improving on the communication to deliver to that. And formal resolution will still be in the model and will be only the last step when we cannot achieve informal resolution. Our focus for 2012, as I shared with you, is process mapping, clear roles and responsibilities, standardized procedures. Again, because we heard from you, we get one thing, it's different than the other. Enhanced communication, simplified communication. We're continually assessing our staffing model. And also, just the last bullet is a reminder, because we get a lot of push about what are you doing for new GTLD readiness. It's just a reminder that in January 2013 is when the string delegation is going to be starting. But between now and then, we have a lot of efforts that are going to get us there. This is the standard process you should see applied regardless of what compliance area we're working with. There's always going to be a first inquiry where we personally will respond via email inquiring what is going on. If we do not hear back, there's a second inquiry that is followed with a phone call. There's a third inquiry that's a phone call, an email, and a fax. So having contact information up to date, having backup to your staff is very important. Sometimes, and this is a lesson learned for us too, we almost breached a registrar, and that registrar freaked out. They were on vacation. The contact person for compliance went on vacation for 2 weeks. So we did not hear the first inquiry, the second inquiry, the third inquiry, and we literally wrote the breach notice. And this guy gets home on Friday night, is checking email like all of us do, and freaks out and calls us. So please make sure your model can accomplish and support not only your business service, but also so we can collaborate. What we've noticed in our model is before we go to enforcement, we would have had that collaboration effort. So what we've noticed is once we reach the breach notice is when we start publishing on our website. What we do not do well is we do not publish updates once we publish a breach notice. So we're working on how frequently should we publish updates on and what type of updates should publish. I'm going to turn it over to Stacy to give you an update since the last trimester, what we have seen come through the compliance and some updates in the other areas.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to share information regarding two areas of focus that we have now, prevention, and these are the prevention activities, and then later I'll talk about enforcement, because that's how we're categorizing all of our activities, either under prevention or enforcement. And during the period since we last met in Singapore, and that's between June and September, we sent out 2,764 compliance inquiries. And usually an inquiry is sent because there's suspected noncompliance. And we're categorizing it as suspected noncompliance because while it may appear to be clear noncompliance from our perspective, you may write us back and clearly explain why you took certain action or why you abstained from taking certain actions, and it will make sense to us, and we'll say, oh, you're right. And so when we write these notices to you, again, they're inquiries, and we encourage you to write us back if you have a valid reason for doing or not doing certain activities. And so these were the areas that we sent these inquiry notices, the contract provisions that we sent these inquiry notices about during the period between June and September. And as you can see, inter-registrar transfer policy is one of the areas where we send the largest number of inquiry notices. Next slide, please. So we're going to talk about WHOIS activities. I'm going to allow Khalil to explain some of our WHOIS work because he's our WHOIS senior manager, and this is a reflection of all the work he's done during the trimester.
Fair enough. Thank you, Stacy. Good morning, everyone. So during the past several months, you may recall in Singapore, we said that we would be reviewing our WHOIS compliance tools, and that's some of the work that I took up since Singapore. And some of you may recall, because we actually invited some of you to participate, provide feedback, particularly on the WDPRS bulk beta system we've been running. So a constant source of work that we get is through the WHOIS data problem reports, which are filed through that WDPRS system. And with respect to single submissions, what I did during the last several months was looked at every single report manually that fell into the two categories. One is a registrar did not respond after 45 days, or we cannot close a ticket after 45 days. So when someone filed a WHOIS inaccuracy, we sent it off to the registrar through our system. If we did not hear back from the registrar within 45 days or cannot close a ticket, a member of our staff manually looked at each of those tickets. And as of 2 weeks ago, that was about 1,280 tickets. As of today, it's about 1,720 tickets. And for each of those tickets, we looked at whether or not this was a legitimate inaccuracy report, whether or not the registrar should have taken action, whether or not the registrar did take action and maybe just did not respond to ICANN. As part of that work, one of the things that we did note is that we had to send additional notices to registrars, and we sent 404 additional notices because we had not received a response or did not find a valid reason for which we could not close the ticket. So in total, just as a background, we received between June and October 5,000 reports overall, roughly 5,000, and we've looked at right around 1,800 or 1,700 of those. So just so you kind of know what's going on and have a background or a better understanding, we closed alleged WHOIS inaccuracy reports if they fall into the category under the left, the column under the left here. So if a registrar has verified at any point prior to the 45-day period that the WHOIS data is accurate, if the WHOIS data was updated, the domain name was deleted, suspended, expired, transferred, or we looked at the report and considered it invalid, we close the ticket and it's over. And if I'm correct, of the 1,280 tickets we looked at up until about 2 weeks ago, 1,000 of those were closed. And that includes sending those escalated notices, the 404 escalated notices, which led to some closure as well. Tickets remain open if you note in the right column for the following reasons, which for the people, the benefit of the telephone, I'll read out. So the registrar has said that they may have initiated an investigation but offered no resolution or what that investigation curtailed. If a registrar claimed to put a domain name on hold, but upon review, we looked at the registry output, the WHOIS data, and found that the domain name was not on hold, then we could not close that ticket and looked into it further. If a registrar claimed to have suspended a domain name but only disabled the name servers or took down a website, we did not consider that closed and sufficient under the RAA provisions for investigating WHOIS inaccuracies. If the registrar claimed the data was corrected, but upon review, our staff noticed it was the exact same data, we weren't able to close the ticket and followed up with the registrar. And lastly, if the registrar claimed that the data is correct, but it just appeared to be blatantly false, then we also could not close the ticket. I think to date, and this is a rough figure, we have 197 potential escalated tickets for a compliance action. Some of these may involve the same registrar, and some of them may be different. And if you have further questions about the methodology, the manner in which we're actually undertaking this work, at our Wednesday session tomorrow, I'd be happy to answer questions. Another aspect of our WHOIS monitoring and compliance is our WHOIS access. Now, registrars are required to provide a Port 43 service, those who actually sponsor names anyway. And so what we've done is actually began monitoring registrars' WHOIS service by conducting our own domain name queries daily, multiple times from different IP addresses, to determine if we could get a response. And so what we noticed is that in our work, since there are no actual service level agreements in the RAA, We try to ping at least 4 times and maximum 10 times daily. And if after 3 days consecutively we did not receive a sufficient response in response to our queries, then we considered that not providing access via port 43 service. And there were 48 instances where that was the case. And most of those we actually were able to resolve in 32 instances. So that's, and again, we can provide more detail on that work tomorrow. Moving right along, since some of us handle the UDRP work as well, we actually have a system through which we receive complaints from complainants and UDRP providers when registrars are accused of not implementing UDRP decisions pursuant to the RAA, UDRP rules and UDRP policy. And this past trimester, through that system, we received about 17 complaints of registrars not implementing these UDRP decisions. As you can see based on the screen, most of these were resolved. In 11 cases, we found that the registrar, after ICANN contacted, actually went ahead and either implemented the decision or the registrar had sufficient grounds for not implementing the decision, meaning it had been challenged in the court of mutual jurisdiction, etc. Of the 6 cases we cannot resolve, one is under escalated compliance review, meaning that we've attempted to contact the registrar to understand why they've not done this and we've not received a sufficient response, and so that could ultimately result in a possible escalated compliance notice. The other 5 are still under investigation. So that's just a little bit about our current UDRP and who has worked for the past trimester. And again, I'd be happy to take more questions after this session or tomorrow as well. Thank you.
You have a question?
Yeah, what's your criteria for determining if a name has been suspended or put on hold?
We cannot hear you.
I'm sorry, Tom from Circa. I was wondering, you said you look to see if the name had been suspended. What criteria do you use to determine that?
We're looking at the registry who is output.
The registrar?
The registry. So I look at the registry and whether or not the name has been placed on hold at the registry, and also look to see if the whatever domain name is actually resolving, even regardless of its status at the registry.
So just to clarify, are you looking for a particular lock on the domain? How do you determine if it's been on hold by the registry?
We look at the registry status, whether it's active, on hold, etc., and that's how we're doing it.
I think it's client hold is my, just based on what Cleo said, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so we do something differently. We actually move it into a different account. You only could determine it by looking at who the registrant would be.
So if you bought the specific example tomorrow and we were able to look at it, I could give you more details.
Sure.
And actually show you the criteria I look at, because we actually have a list and we can compare it.
Okay, moving right along to registrar data escrow. And again, this falls under our prevention category, more work that we're doing to prevent registrars from being considered for escalated compliance action. And as you know, our registrar data escrow provisions are in the agreement, in the registrar accreditation agreement, to protect registrants in the event of a registrar failure. And ICANN has dedicated resources within our organization, within the compliance department, to monitoring regularly whether registrars are submitting data pursuant to their schedule that they've been given, and whether the data that they are submitting is consistent with the requirements for submission. And so we want to give you some information concerning what we found between the months of June and September of 2011. We found that 24 registrars were non-compliant with either their submission schedules, or they submitted data that was not valid. And data that's not valid means that there's a problem with what you've submitted. Either you're not populating some of the fields, or what you're populating the fields with is not consistent with what's been required. And so 17 of those registrars that were identified as non-compliant resolved their issues quickly, And we have seven that we're working with. Sometimes there are language barriers in terms of understanding what the requirements are, and we end up going back and forth with our registrar partners attempting to explain certain requirements. And we're happy to do that. It's not as if we find it burdensome at all. We want you to be compliant with this provision of the contract. As part of our contract with Iron Mountain, which is the provider that most registrars are using to escrow their data, they perform audits for us. And during the period between June and September, 556 registrars were a part of the audits that Iron Mountain performs for ICANN. And of the 556 registrars that participated in the audit, we found problems were found with a significant number, and notices were sent saying this was a problem, you failed a particular audit, please correct, do whatever is necessary to correct. And in most cases, registrars do that. We do have a few registrars that we're still working with to bring them in compliance based on the audit findings. Next slide, please. We've shared with you on past occasions that the inter-registrar transfer policy is the area where we receive the most consumer complaints. And we have consistently attempted to address the issue of inter-registrar transfer policy noncompliance. And so we followed up with these complaints between the period of August of 2010 to July of 2011. And we sent out inquiry notices, and I described what an inquiry notice was earlier, a suspicion of noncompliance. And we asked registrars to follow up and take appropriate action if indeed there is noncompliance. And we also conducted an audit. And we realized more work needs to be done in this area in terms of educating registrars about what needs to be done to comply with the policy, and also better registrant education so that registrants are confused as to what they should be expecting as part of the transfer process. And so we're being creative, trying to figure out some ways to address these issues. And if you have some ideas, we'd be welcome to that too. Next slide, please. So now we're going to talk. Yes.
If you're moving off of transfers, this is just a clarifying question. Mm-hmm. You said there's more work being done. You know, here are a couple things that would be good at an interim stage, but there's more work to be done. And
here are some things we've done thus far, meaning we've conducted an audit and we've followed up on complaints. But more education needs to be done because this seems to be a persistent problem. We keep getting a large number of complaints in this
area. So then I'm confused about the educating registrars. So let me be specific. I had thought there was a relatively high concentration around the problems. And so it would seem that that's not an education problem.
You mean
registrars?
Only a specific number. A few are committing the same violations over and over.
Right. So in which case education wouldn't seem to be the problem unless you would just be continually repeating yourself.
Well, there are always new registrars being accredited. I understand, Elliot. But while there are a certain number that seem to be having problems, it's not as if we don't get complaints from other registrar partners, about other registrar partners. So education still is important for all registrars.
Wait, sorry, let me finish that thread, because yes, education is important for all registrars.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't clear at the beginning if this work was continuing in terms of how you could start to rectify the problem, this high volume of complaints, and we're identifying that education, if there's a concentration of registrar problem, is not a solution. So either kind of what's the continuing work or what are the proposed solutions in that situation?
Okay, so as I said, we're continuing to explore how we can better address the problem, whether it's with a few registrars or with the general community.
Okay. All right. I've got Elliot, Jeff, Jennifer, McKaylee. So Jeff. I'm sorry. Were you done, Elliot? Excuse me. Okay.
So. This is Jeff at Casser. So question about, it says average 400 to 500 complaints a month. Do you have sort of a breakdown of what those complaints are? And are those, like, first, what are the, how many from consumers, how many, because you said there are some from other registrars, but also what is the nature of those complaints? Is it, because for us saying it's 400 to 500, it seems like a large number, but trying to figure out what it is so that maybe we can help address it, like how much of it could be user error, how much of it is, you know, the gaining registrar or the losing registrar. What are those complaints based upon, not being able to access EPP codes?
Right. So what we can do after this meeting is provide the slides for this presentation and some follow-up slides that demonstrate the different categories that we receive complaints concerning the transfer policy. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. The slides will be available to everybody after the meeting. Right. So,
but we have some slides on the categories, and so we can provide that as part of the slide deck.
Well, the slide deck is already posted online.
We can update it. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Send it to Lacey.
Sure. Yeah. Different.
Okay, Jeff, are you done? Okay, Jennifer.
Jennifer Gore.
Yes.
Jeff basically asked my question, but my other part of that question was, of those complaints, how many registrars are represented?
I don't have the data with me today.
Yeah, but if you could add that to the slides, that'd be helpful to understand. You know, are 20% of the registrars driving 80% of the complaints? Thank you.
And maybe some concentration data too.
How many registrars are represented in the number of complaints?
Michaela?
Yeah, I mean, about 2 years ago, we got some of the very, very detailed data from David Geezer. And I mean, the thing is, the details that you're willing to share now, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. But actually, he went in much more deeply. Because one of the things that was identified at the time was that, for example, a very, very large registrar is obviously going to get a larger number of complaints, mm-hmm. obviously, but you can easily see things like, say, a registrar that's only got 1,000 names on their accreditation, if they've managed to generate 20 complaints, then as a proportion, the percentage mapping, mm-hmm. it shows a very clear problem. But the other thing was that at the time, it was clear that you might not be collecting some of the data at the moment of inputting the complaint that would actually help, as in, this was one of the things that we were looking at, and David had been talking to us about how he's going to improve the entire collection of this data from the complaint system, but then he left. nothing further happened about it. We never heard anything further. And the thing is, with IRTP, there's a series of PDPs, and it's going on and on and on, and as soon as we finish this series of PDPs, I'm pretty sure that there's going to be a new series of PDPs on the same bloody topic. So any
data,
clear, tangible data, and like, you know, if you need to talk to us on the registrar side so we can help you to ask the right kind of questions mm-hmm. and get rid of some of these things. So instead of having, say, 500 complaints, when in reality a lot of those might simply be that the registrant doesn't understand what they can or cannot do, you know, it's just, it would be helpful. Thanks.
We have a question on the phone from Tim Ruiz. Tim, go ahead.
Thanks, Mason. And my question was, it's kind of back about the who is, and in regards to the way suspension, you know, to see if the domain is suspended, to see how that's done, and that it sounded like it was defined as some status at the registry, which certainly could be one way, but I would think that any that if a website or if a domain name does not resolve to a website, however that's done, and it can be done other ways than just at the registry, potentially, you know, that it would be for all effective purposes suspended. So I'm just wondering why it's defined as some status at the registry.
This is Khalil. Tim, thanks for your comment, or question, rather. I'm not sure I understood the question, but I think you asked why it is that we consider registry status as part of our determination of whether or not alleged who is inaccuracies have been investigated. And one reason we thought, as I recall, when this methodology was developed, was that that was a sure way to determine whether or not a name had been taken out the zone. I do not have that information here before me, but I can't commit to get that to you. But I also would like to reiterate the point that our HUIA's efforts are currently under review and under assessment. So the way things done and how they've been done are not necessarily how they're going to be done, particularly if we determine that they are not effective or there are better ways or more to do things. So I very much welcome your input. I believe even members of your staff have actually had input into some of the things we've done and submitted paperwork. So I would mostly reiterate that. Again, although I don't have the data here before me, I can try to produce what I have tomorrow, particularly if those in the room will be at the Wednesday session. And I'm also available after this meeting as well.
All right. Thanks, Khalil. Other questions? Okay. Megan? I'm sorry, Stacy. Go ahead.
Okay. So now I want to focus on our enforcement activities. During the period between June and September, we sent 9 escalated compliance notices, and those were all breach notices, and we considered 4 registrars for non-renewal. These are the contract categories that we sent our breach notices in, and the numbers on the right don't neatly add up to 9 because, as you know, sometimes we might point out more than one contract provision concerning a breach. And the areas that we considered non-renewing certain registrars are the following: WHOIS violations, failure to provide an interactive web page, failure to post a deletion and auto-renewal policy, and failure to pay accreditation fees. And fortunately, these registrars all corrected the problems before their contract expiration date, and ICANN entered into a renewal agreement with all 4. Next slide. So I believe in Singapore we shared information with you about a process being developed for receiving information from law enforcement entities and actually sending information to law enforcement entities if it's ever necessary. And so as part of this process that's being developed, we have emphasized to our law enforcement community members that ICANN is only interested in receiving information about RAA violations, suspected RAA violations. If you send us information about content, we don't have authority to act on that. And so we've had meetings with them at the past few ICANN meetings, international ICANN meetings, and we haven't completed the process for how we're going to receive and send information to our law enforcement community members. But prior to implementing any process, we plan to share the proposed plan with this group and get any feedback from you regarding the proposal.
I'm sorry, Stacy, we had a question over here. Jeff?
Sure.
Hi, Jeff Eckhouse here from UNAM. So I've received a couple of these law enforcement referrals, and I wanted to give you guys, if I can, some feedback on this issue. It says here that ICANN's primary role is to determine if there's an RAA violation. So I know, you know, and what they had said, we've received these referrals, and what they've said was, we received information from law enforcement. It's, you know, you need to take these domain names down. And then when I, you know, we responded saying, who was the law enforcement? What was the information? Can you please, you know, send it to us? And the responses I get, it's from valid law enforcement, you know. And it's sort of like going back and forth. And finally, I was able to pull out some more information on there. But just for you guys, so you know that when you send these to us saying, we received notice from law enforcement, please take this down. We need more information than that. I don't know who law enforcement is. It could be, you know, we receive information from law enforcement in other countries saying this person is committing a crime, you need to take it down, and they're saying things critical of the government, and to them that is, you know, a violation. That's their law enforcement. So just, I know you have, you know, it's, you have the US and the UK on there, but just if you can give us more information. And to, I would say, to ask law enforcement to speak directly to us and to the registrars, because having you as a conduit, I think things get lost and I have to go back to you and then you go back to them. So ask them for a direct relationship and to come to us. I would say don't let ICANN be sort of their funnel to come to us. It doesn't work out. It loses our relationship with them. And, you know, even though what we've seen sort of this week, we do want to have a good relationship with law enforcement. So I would push them towards us, not let ICANN become a conduit for their requests. Thanks.
So, Jeff, I'm sorry if you interpreted the message to say, please cancel the domain name. We didn't say that. I reviewed the message that was sent to you, and it specifically says, please investigate. There's a difference. And so, as part of what we are proposing for this law enforcement program is to have the law enforcement entity reach out to you first. We understand the importance of that, and we believe that they could probably make a lot of progress reaching you directly as opposed to using us. So we agree with you in that regard, and we don't want to send any notice to you saying, you know, take action. It's usually, please investigate. Tell us what you find.
Please investigate and take appropriate action, you know, based, you know, because what it's sort of, I would say work on sort of the language on there that when you guys send things to us saying, hey, take an investigation, let us know what you find out, versus investigate and take action is what it says. So it's just, I'm just saying, if you want us to investigate and come back to you, then tell us that, or just work on some of the wording on it, because a lot of times people get, I know myself, we have a large compliance group, and a lot of the people, they get a notice from ICANN, it's this official notice, and it says take action. And to them, they think that means you need to do something immediately, not come back to ICANN. So realize a lot of times the employees who read this might be lower level, you know, just starting out employees, or that they get things from ICANN, they get worried because you're the official, you know, group.
Right.
So just, I guess, some help on the language would warm and fuzzy might be helpful.
We hear that. I interpret take appropriate action, meaning if do nothing is take appropriate action, then that's appropriate. But we hear you. We're not trying to sound an alarm and say, do something. We are asking you to investigate, though. We need that language to be clear.
Jeff, I'm a little confused. I mean, is it that your staff have problems with the concept of appropriate action? I mean, we get takedown notices from companies all the time, and they might ask us for all sorts of things. It doesn't mean we're actually going to do it. I mean, we'll investigate it and we'll deal with it.
Yeah, as Rob is just saying, there's a difference between some company that says take it down, and I'm like, I don't know who they are, versus somebody who I have a contract with that controls my business.
If they ask you to take it down, it's one thing. They're saying take appropriate action. That doesn't mean take it down. I mean, that to me means look into it and deal with it in a suitable fashion. That's all.
Everyone has their own interpretation and of what appropriate action is. That's the whole idea, is you might think appropriate action is one thing. I think there's no right or wrong here. That's what I'm saying. Just if we could be crystal clear, it would make things a lot easier.
Okay. So we hear you. We're going to try to soften the language to the extent we can, but we do need to make our messages clear. And so thank you for your comment. We're going to take it under consideration. So we've gone over some general updates, and we've gone over a review of some prevention activities and enforcement activities we've been engaged in. We want to talk to you about some areas where we want to focus on going forward. Improving communication. We've observed that in the past when registrars may have experienced a failure, or they thought they were going to experience an emergency situation that might interrupt their services, there wasn't an established process for communicating to ICANN that you're having a problem. And we believe it's really important that we hear from you if there is a problem going on with your registrar that might impact the provision of services. And so we believe that by working together, we might be able to better coordinate a public response, because if you're experiencing a failure, the public starts calling us, and your phones may not be working for some reason. Let's say there's a natural disaster in your area and you're having problems providing registrar services. if somehow we could create a process that your group believes is agreeable and works for ICANN, we believe we could work together whenever there's a problem concerning your inability to continue to provide registrar services. And so we want to introduce this idea to you. It's not an RAA requirement, but we believe going forward it might be a way for us to work together to better communicate to the public and possibly help you resolve your issue while you're going through it. Any thoughts on that? You need some more time to think about it. No problem. We'll follow up with Mason or whoever's the chair and determine how we can work on this proposed process and if you think it's a good idea. So another thing we want to focus on going forward is prevention. It's not our goal to send breach notices or to terminate registrars. It's our goal to bring you into compliance. And so what we want to stress, how important it is, and I know you all know this because you are the active members of the registrar community, but if you have any questions about your contractual obligations, please contact us. It's important that you keep your staff trained as to what your obligations are. And it's important that you keep your information and radar up to date, because if we have a simple compliance issue that could easily be resolved, but for whatever reason we have the wrong contact information for you, it appears as though you're non-responsive. And so then it gets escalated because you're non-responsive, and that doesn't have to be the case if you maintain accurate contact details and radar. Please timely respond to our inquiries and our correspondence and work with us to try to resolve your issues. Just because we've contacted you doesn't mean it has to be a fight or you know, an argument. It's just that we want to find out information, and we do want you to take appropriate action if necessary. So at this point, we want to talk. Yes?
I'm just kind of curious. Are you actually having issues contacting some of the registrars and registries?
Registrars, mostly.
Okay. I mean, just because, considering most of us are pretty much kind of public facing, and you know, paying you fees and other such things, I mean, surely you can contact people.
Again, you're the active registrars in the community. You abide by your obligations, but there are some other registrars, again, there are almost 1,000 of you, who maybe they're not focused on this business, they have another primary business, and for a variety of reasons, they don't maintain their contact information accurate in radar, the information on their website is not working, and we have a problem contacting them. I know it seems strange to you, but it's true, it does happen.
All right. Great feedback. This is why we like coming and talking to you, and we'll have many more opportunities. But again, we said it in Munich. We said it in Singapore. We're going to hear us say it all the time. Yes, the registrar, registry, Elliot, the regroup. Yes. So we have a generic compliance email. So if you're thinking about something, something's confusing, or you have a feedback. You know, one of the feedbacks in Munich is simplify your letters. I'm looking around the table. I don't think many of you or any of you received some of those letters. But they used to be more longer, more legal language, harder to track maybe, as some of the feedback we got, the sequence of events. So we've simplified it to reduce the letter to a simple one-page business letter with a clear message on the front and an appendix that lists the sometimes the chronology or the events that took place, so that it's clear to all. And again, to your comment, Jeff, you know, we're trying to keep in mind the multicultural, multi-diverse global audience. So send us your feedback at this address. Title it feedback. I do want to hear from you. Again, everybody says, I want to help you. You know, today's our roadshow day. We're going to 5 shows today. You know, we're going to talk to the different stakeholders. And that's why I put in the vision for our team, trusted. We are dealing with very different stakeholder team members. So in order for us to be trusted, we are fact-based. For us to be fact-based, I need to understand what are the facts that are of interest to you, what are your expectations, and we'll come back to you and say, yeah, we can deliver to this, or no, we cannot, and here's why. So what are the most important thing? What are some of your challenges, too? Like, again, and what information is valuable to you? Those are very important information that will help us deliver our service to you, with an email or a phone call away. And to Stacey's point, you are the active registrars. The challenge we face, and we're trying to think out of the box, how can we reach out to the non-active ones and get them engaged in the community? Yes, Michele.
Sorry, Maggie.
You notice I didn't call you Sunshine yet today.
Yeah, I know.
Yet.
You were doing so well. You were doing so well. Now you've ruined it.
Well, the others are helping.
Just one practical question. In Europe, there is nobody from compliance in Europe. I know one of the registrar liaisons is kind of doubling up in that function. And a practical question I would have is, are there any plans for a dedicated compliance staff member for Europe? And linked to that, if that is to happen further down the road, do you plan to make sure that person is multilingual? Because the vast majority of registrars within Europe are not native English speakers.
Right.
And they may be following this stuff closely, but they are not engaging due to the language barrier.
Yes.
Listen, you little Belgian, okay. I don't know what.
Okay, good feedback. Thank you. But I would like to tell the team, our team, I think, I know the compliance team can cover 5 languages. We can cover English, of course, French, Arabic, Chinese, and Spanish. So
it's a simple practical issue of
time zones. Right.
Because if you're all in California.
Let me finish.
All right, go on.
I'm not going to call him Sunshine. He has to earn it.
Ouch.
So let me answer you in the sake of transparency. I'm focusing, I need more in the Asia Pacific for Korean and some of the other areas. The biggest volume of transfer issues are Asia Pacific, okay? Can I handle Europe? I've been on calls with Europe at midnight. I've been on calls with Europe at 1 a.m. if I need to. I speak fluently French. I've come and I would translate to my team if need be and we'll handle it. So I'm looking at the weak or the risk issues in our compliance team. We still have 3 open positions, and yes, we are hiring globally, not locally. This is the day, the outreach day, guys. We're trying it new. It's not going to be open to outside participation because it's new. So we're trying to set out an outreach session. For tomorrow, we've blocked the time from 9 to 10:30. I know we've put out the registrar self-assessment. It's still in draft mode. If you have questions or you have feedback, stop by. But notice, we have a Q&A session from 10:45 to 12. It is not a mic. It's not recorded. Stop by. Questions. We may have an answer. If we do not, we'll follow up. The afternoon session, I highly recommend if you have staff members with you. We partnered with Iron Mountain to do an overview of what is data escrow, what do we do, how we do it. It's more of an education. And also, what are the challenges we're seeing in data escrow? So it's more of a two-way street, what are we seeing, what are you seeing? But again, we have a Q&A from 3:30 to 5. Okay?
We have a question online. Our friend James Bladel, I would have called on him, but apparently he has a big case of laryngitis and he can't talk. So his question is, in regard to outreach to non-active registrars, is it unreasonable to think that ICANN should be in routine or periodic communication with all of its registrars?
What, can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Is it unreasonable to think that ICANN should be in routine or periodic communication with all of its registrars? He's asking in the context of outreach to non-active registrars. James, I would ask you if I got that question right, but you can't talk.
So when you speak of communication, we all have different ways to interpret it. It could be verbal. It could be outreach. So we are looking at how can we, if you have ideas how we can do it, please share with us. I'm also already started working with Tim Cole, how can we reach out to the rest of the registrar community? So we're also going to start traveling and see how can we group people by region, by country, by zone to see. But we will be partnering with Tim as they hold the registry sessions. But it's always a challenge, James, as you know, for the non-active participants. If you have ideas, send them our way. We're willing to explore.
Okay, he's suggesting email, phone call, breach letter, these types of things. Sure. So I'll encourage him to follow up with you. Okay. Okay, we have two more in the queue. Jeff's next, and then Yoav is online. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. I think I wanted to say that even though, you know, I had some comments and criticisms earlier that just to give you guys, overall the group I think has done a much better job in their communications, you know, and with the outreach and the phone calls and the conference calls about how to move forward. And I know, for example, on the RDE, we were, since we have over 100 accreditations, we had a couple of issues with the header rows, and we received emails, and, you know, those were worked out pretty quickly, and you guys have been definitely, you know, saying, hey, how do we fix this? What's the issue? Let's work together. And I'd say it's definitely been an advancement over the last, you know, year with the group. And then, as you can tell, you have some criticisms here, but it doesn't compare to the that's another word for shitstorm that we've had, you know, in previous years in this room. So thanks definitely for the advancement.
You want to follow that? Okay, please, go ahead.
Yeah, my comment was just going to be pretty much on, I was going to reflect upon when you guys first walked in here, you know, a number of meetings ago and the shitstorm that Jeff called. And I was just buoyed by, just been listening today, the way you have communicated today, how... the candor has been very open for discussion, and I think that's very much appreciated by this audience. And we thank you for, you know, it can be confrontational, but and has been in the past. But I think you've worked very, very hard, and we want to show our appreciation for the fact that you're listening and you want to work with us and not against us. So good job, guys. Keep it up.
Adrian, thank you very much. May I return the applause to you too, because every time I ask for volunteers, first of all, every time I ping Mason, I don't care what time of day and night he responds, so I appreciate that courtesy. Whoever is stepping into his shoes, I warn you, I'm a gnat. Sunshine, a smiley gnat. I will bug you until I hear from you. So partnership takes two, guys, right? It takes two to tango. You cannot handshake alone. So, but at the same time, we're establishing processes and procedures. We're tightening the timeline. When we send notices, we want responses. We are under a lot of pressure. Okay? So are you. And that's for the sake of transparency. We will post all of the processes, the procedures, after we've reviewed them and socialized them with everyone. Because you do have a swim lane and a process where you have roles and responsibilities. And if you do, we will come back to you to review it. So please provide feedback and let us know, good or bad. Okay?
And thank you for the insight into the lack of life that Mason has. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Well, I'm all about transparency. Yoav, you're up next, and then we have a question from Tim. Yoav, go ahead, please.
Yes, my question is, I'm coming from the point you were talking about, that there are old-time new registrars coming in, and probably not all of them know about all the compliance requirements. You know, you can read the accreditation agreement, but it's legal language. Some people might not understand all the requirements and what is expected from them. Did you consider at any point preparing kind of a guidebook with more, I would say, interpretations of ICANN, of the compliance team, to what is required from each registrar? I've never seen such a document. And, I'm sure it will help new registrars. It might help other registrars, too, that are already there, to make sure that they are compliant, kind of a checklist of different issues.
Yoav, good question. Are you aware of Okay, I totally agree with you. Like I said to you guys a long time ago, I'm not a lawyer, so I read the sentence 10 times, and I try to read it in three different languages if possible. But there is a non-lawyer interpretation of the contract, but I know the registrar liaison team is launching the training about the RAA, and in there, I was on the beta testing phase of it, and it was very helpful. But let me take it a step further. Again, send us feedback. What region, if you can get a group together and stuff like that. You know, technology today, we can do conference calls to inform and educate and hear your side too. There are many means to do outreach. Send us feedback for future meetings, even if you cannot come. If Wednesday works and you have specific topics, we can deliver to those at the next meetings. Okay.
No. I was just referring. By the way, I'm not referring only to the RAA. I'm generally, you know, there are other policies that registrars need to follow, and it's not specifically for us. I'm just talking about new registrars that might be more helpful for them to have such a document to check whether they are, in compliance when they start working.
Okay, we'll take that into consideration. It's like a checklist, what I'm hearing you.
Yeah.
And Tim, yes.
Hi, this is Tim Cole. I will be speaking, giving an update this afternoon about the training program. But among other things is that the program contains numerous takeaways. So for almost every policy, there are checklists that you can download to follow. And so I think we'll find a lot of the answers are going to be there, Yoav. But I'll give more details this afternoon.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Yoav, thank you. Any other last-minute questions? Because we're almost out of time for this compliance staff. All right. Khalil, Stacy, Maggie, thank you all very much. Appreciate all the input and the exchange. Thank you. All right. Registrars, we're going to take a 15-minute break. When we return, we'll, at 11 o'clock, we'll be back in closed session. Matt?
Yeah, so like Mason said, in 15 minutes, we'll come back in closed session. That means the Adobe Connect stream will stop. So registrars, if you're in Adobe Connect, you need to dial into the phone conference bridge. If you have a problem, send me an email or IM me. 15-minute break. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt, for those clear explanations.
What would be the passphrase?
I'll follow up with you, Bob.
Okay, 11 o'clock back in the room here. Thanks very much.
That's 15 minutes for those of you in different time zones. 15 minutes.
Is that like quarter of an hour?
Stefan, would you please stop complicating the issue?
What would a passphrase be?
Half hour.
In 15 minutes.
It's the same as it was this morning, Bob. The very first one.